Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Lord David Cameron will be back around the Cabinet table today for the first time since he stood down as Prime Minister and quit as an MP in 2016. It's as Rishi Sunak assembles his new Cabinet after sacking former Home Secretary Suella Braverman yesterday. The UN Humanitarian Office says another 200,000 people have fled northern Gaza since the 5th of November. It is Israeli ground forces say they battle Palestinian militants around the hospitals. The Humanitarian Office says only one hospital in the north is capable of receiving patients. Average regular earnings increased by more than 7.5% in the 3 months to September. The Office for National Statistics says it lifted 1% after taking consumer prices index inflation into account. Water companies will be forced to pay out £70 million to customers after falling short of performance targets. Industry regulator Ofwat says the fines for underperforming suppliers will be passed on to customers through lower bills over 2024 and 2025. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Sophia Lewis-Hobbs.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Now that calls for a dance, Dermot.
Do I have to?
You can limbo. That's it.
Oh, thanks. Just call me Dermot O'Limbo.
Very good.
Get that Euro Millions feeling tonight. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot, account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Hi, I'm Austin Obi-Cherry, a bowel cancer screening specialist. Believe it or not, your next trip to the toilet could save your life. If you receive an NHS bowel cancer screening kit in the post, you should complete it as soon as possible. You do it privately at home by following a few simple steps. Just a tiny sample detects signs of cancer before you notice anything wrong. If you're sent a bowel cancer screening kit, put it by the loo. Don't put it off. For more information, visit nhs.uk/bowel screening.
London has made real progress in reducing new HIV diagnoses, and that's because we know what works. Be sure. Know the four ways to prevent HIV. 1. Test regularly and know your status. 2. Condoms can prevent HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. 3. PrEP is a pill which can prevent HIV. 4. Undetectable, or U equals U, means people living with HIV on treatment cannot pass it on. Be sure. Know the four. Together we can reach zero new HIV infections. Visit doitlondon.org.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful
Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on this time zone that you are listening to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Mpaluto. Wonderful day, great time too. Yeah, we're coming to you all the way from the heart of London to wherever you are on Colorful Radio. So keep it colorful. It's going to be a wonderful day. As today, we are joined by a great artist all the way from Egypt. Her name is Swart, and she's done great work over there, you know, being the mirror of the society there. And through her hard work, we get to see a lot. But why should I talk about her? We have her in the studio, so she'll tell us all about that. So, Swart, please welcome to Africa in Focus. Introduce yourself. And also say hello to our fantastic listeners, wherever they are.
Hello, I'm Saad Abdel Rasool. I'm from Egypt. I'm a painter. This is the first time for me in London, and it's a great experience for me.
That's great to have you. Great to have you in our studios today. So we just want you to, of course, we want to travel this journey with you. For starters, how did you start painting? How did you become a painter? How did you become an artist? What was the inspiration?
أنا بالنسبة لي الفن التشكيلي بدأ معايا من وأنا صغيرة، وكان المدخل مش اعتيادي، كان حاجة غريبة أن أنا حبيت كتب التشريح ومادة الأحياء، وكنت بحب أرسم الأعضاء الداخلية وكأني عايزة أشوف الحاجات من جوه.
So art came to her when she was very, very, very young. From a young age, she was very interested in the subject of biology and more specifically anatomy and the organs. And so I'm like, she started sketching from there, and here we are, all spiraled.
Amazing. So when you talk about the work that you have done, it's not just one focused on one issue. I'm sure it's more than that as well. How did you, number one, grow up through the society? Because Egyptian culture is a bit, in terms of conservative a bit, and in terms of the work that you chose to pursue in the beginning, I don't know, how was it received?
هو أنا اتكلمت عن بداية شغفي بالفن، لكن هي الرحلة نفسها ده قرار خدته وأنا أكبر من كده. يعني أنا بدأت عندي شغف بالرسم والفن من وأنا صغيرة، بس لما كبرت وقررت إن الفن ده يبقى حكايتي وموضوعي، كان في بقى تحديات كتيرة، شبه إن أنا بنت في مجتمع محافظ عنده معايير ضاغطة على البنات، فده كان ده اللي كان المحرك لان انا اعمل فن، ان انا برسم حاجات بتعامل بيها مع الازمات اللي بيسببها المجتمع للبنات في مجتمعي.
So when she was talking about her interest in art from a young age and anatomy and biology, that was all where her interest in art came from. Her journey into art happened when she was a lot older, when she decided that this was something that she wanted to be her career and like her passion. There was a lot of obstacles in her way, considering that she grew up in, obviously, as you said, a pretty conservative country. So what she did was she used those obstacles and the pressure that Egypt puts on young girls, and she fueled that into her art, which is what we can all see when we look at it.
And when we look into where you are today, we are looking into the issues that you have explored, especially women's position in society. And I've been to Egypt, and I came there during the Arab Spring, and one of the things that was so obvious to me at the airport was I couldn't see a lot of ladies working. But I'm like, where are the ladies? Because I miss the customer service ladies give. It's like, yeah, you're focused on your job more than politics like men do. And I was like, wow, why is it that we can't find a lot of ladies working there? And does that go across everywhere else? And I'm asking because people who don't come from Egypt don't know, but sometimes people have that assumption. Is it true that women don't work?
No. لا المصريات بيشتغلوا وفي كل المجالات بنسب، بس ده مش حال مصر بس، اعتقد دول كتيرة، حتى في دول محسوبة على الدول الحرة فيها الستات بتاخد مرتبات اقل او امتيازات اقل، لكن لا احنا عندنا الستات بيشتغلوا طول الوقت. لكن هي الفكرة بقى من الطفولة، هي فكرة طريقة التربية اللي بتخلي في بعض المهن مفضلة اكتر للرجالة او مسموح بيها بشكل اكبر للرجالة، لكن لا عندنا المرأة بالعكس. انا بشوف بحترم الست المصرية جدا لانها عندها قوة بتتعامل بيها مع كل الظروف الضغطة دي، وبتلاقي مكانها بمجهود اكبر طبعا من اي حد.
So she's saying that it's not true. Women in Egypt do actually work in all the fields that you could imagine, obviously at a lesser percentage than their male counterparts, but even the most progressive of countries are doing the same. So eventually we will reach a point where that's not the case. However, she's saying that she does very much respect Egyptian women, because despite all the pressures around them and how difficult it is to get to a certain stage, they manage to make a place for themselves in that society. And of course, growing up, they are steered into one career more than the other, purely because there is a conception that, okay, these careers are for women and these are for men, but despite all the odds, they still make it out.
No, I'm happy to clarify that, because a lot of people have that assumption, because come to the airport, you see lots of men controlling everything, and you're like, where are the women? And you're immediately thinking, some people say, oh, women in this country don't work. So it's really good to clarify that. But then come back to your work. You're focused on especially women's place in society. Could you maybe share with us why is that the case and what areas? Because I don't want to share this for you because you know better and we are with you here.
هو أنا في الأول أنا فنانة ست فأنا بشتغل شغلي دوت بتكلم عن نفسي في المقام الأول فعلشان أنا ست فبيطلع شغلي وكأني نسوية أو كأني لكن بعبر عن نفسي وبعبر عن نفسي وعن الناس اللي شبهي اللي هم برضو عنهم نفس الحاجات المشتركة اللي هي الستات اللي شبهي لكن أنا قضيتي أعتقد أن أنا ليها علاقة بالإنسان عموما بس أنا ست فبعبر عن حاجاتي فبتطلع كده.
A lot of the time she's saying that her work is very interpreted as strong feminist movements, and although that is fine, she's saying that it's very common to interpret her work like that because before anything she is a woman and an artist, and so when she does put those two aspects into her work, it's very clear that she's expressing herself, and so because of that people take the whole feminist ideal and run with it. And though that's not wrong, she's saying that her work is to appeal to humans in general. It is for humans, and it's not just for the women.
Okay, that's great. So what how much does it resonate with of course people in Egypt? How big has it become? Have you done a lot of exhibitions within Egypt as well, and how was it received? We can also talk about internationally. Where places you were exhibited?
يعني شغلك انت اشتغلتي فين وهم كان رد فعلهم ايه في مصر وبلد تانية؟
اوكي. لا احنا عندنا الفن التشكيلي احنا مش انا عايزة بس اشرح حاجة بوضوح. الحكاية انه المجال مفتوح بس احنا بنتربى ازاي عشان نوصل للمجال دوت. يعني المسألة إن ما فيش حاجة ممنوعة عن الست بس هي بتتربى إزاي عشان توصل للحتة دي هي الفكرة هنا طريقة التربية اللي بتخلي الستات عارفة اللي هو بتكسر حاجات تخلينا بتصعب علينا الوصول لكن هو المجال مفتوح دي حاجة الحاجة التانية عايز الترجمة دي وأكمل ولا
لا كملي وانا
دي فكرة الحاجة الأهم إنه أنا من بدايتي أول مواجهة للمجتمع كان في مشروع تخرجي لأنه كان مشروع فيه فجر عاري وده كان في وقتها مش مقبول اجتماعيا ودي كانت أول علامة لي أنا شخصيا إن أنا قدامي تحدي ما ماشي بعد كده بدأت بقى عندي الأدوات اللي أنا بيها بقوي نفسي عشان أتعامل مع الحاجات دي مع المجتمع ده ولكن أنا في العرض لا أنا مقبولة والشغل مقبول بس ده بمجهود أنا مجهود شخصي أنا بذلته عشان أوصل للحتة دي.
So she's saying that it's a very common misconception that the whole field of art is closed off to women in Egypt, and that's just not true. What it is the way that they are raised, less so than the career choice in itself or the area in itself. So it took a lot of breaking boundaries for her to be able to reach that point. And this became very clear to her during her graduation project in university, when her work was of a naked figure and there was a lot of surprise and outrage at that. And that was something that truly showed her that this was an obstacle she would have to face. But in terms of how her work is received now, it's great and she gets all the attention she wishes for. And people really enjoy her work, but that's not something that came easily. She had to do a lot to reach that point.
Well, that's fantastic. And when they say your work connects human and animal figures to the natural world, what are they talking about?
أنا عموما فكرتي عن الإنسان مش الست بس، الإنسان إن هو مش أفضل من أي حاجة في الكرة الأرضية. يعني إحنا إيكوال، إحنا الأرض، الحيوانات، السماء، المعاد، إحنا فينا كل حاجة جوانا. فأنا طول الوقت عندي علاقة بالطبيعة، فهتلاقيني بمزج الحيوانات يعني ممكن تلاقي وش إنسان طلع منه وش حمار مثلا أو طائر. فدي لأنه أنا شايفة إن إحنا جزء من الطبيعة، ما احناش عنصر أهم أو أعلى، احنا معاها زيها.
So she's saying that to her the world in itself is inside it, like humans and animals and the sky and the stars and the earth, it's all one. There is nothing that is better than the other. In this day and age, it's very common to believe that humans are the most superior, but she thinks that nature in itself all connects together. And so that's why it's very possible for in her work to see like a human face and then like a bird or a donkey coming out of it. It's just the expression that nature in itself is all one with one another. And that's something she believes very passionately about. So we see it a lot in her work.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
I like that. You see, I'm from Kenya and we share half the country animals, half the country people. And animals never fought, but humans fought in elections. But we are that unseen and written contract that when an animal shows, you relax because we share the same country. So don't be surprised if you go to Nairobi, for example. Nairobi is the only capital city in the world whereby it's got a national park next to it. So in a good day, you may find lions on the streets.
She wants to talk about her relationship to Kenya.
Sure, no problem. That's okay.
كينيا من أول الدول الإفريقية اللي أنا سافرتها، وبصراحة أنا يعني دي الفتنة الكبرى حصلت لي في البلد دي في علاقة الناس بالطبيعة وأثرها. وأنا وفعلا أنا كان ممكن بسهولة جدا أمشي ألاقي غزلان في الشارع، ألاقي أسود، ودي بالنسبة لي كانت حاجة مدهشة، ودي عملت تغيير لشوفي للعالم. يعني أنا كنت بحس وسط الغابات إن أنا حاجة صغيرة والغابات هي سيدة الموقف يعني. فأنا علاقتي بالطبيعة اتأثرت جدا بوجودي في كينيا بشكل من حوالي 15 سنة وأنا بسافر تقريبا كل سنة.
She's saying that when she went to Kenya, that was one of the first African countries that she traveled to other than her own home country, and it was a culture shock for her to see how connected people were with nature and the animals. It wasn't something normal. And as you said, it was very possible to walk out onto the street and see a gazelle or a lion or whatever. And so that really reshaped her thinking into how nature works, because she used to think of herself as something small and insignificant, and the jungle or the animals as something big and like so far away, so unattainable. But then when she went to Kenya, she found that all these aspects merged into one. It wasn't as though they were two separate entities. They became one.
It is actually true. There are communities who actually share their environment with animals. There are communities like the Maasai community. They live in some of the national parks. So where they live is the same place where you find the animals. So how do they live? How do they survive? Is a way which is amazing in terms of nature, understanding how animals behave so that you understand how you should behave towards them. One of the greatest rule I came across to survive in the jungle, if you see an animal, don't be fearful. Just be calm as you can be. And the animal won't sense any tension or danger. And they will be like, there's no issue between you and me.
وفعلا ده حقيقي, لانه انا كانت اول تعامل بيني وبين الحيوانات في كينيا انه كانوا بيجوا الصبح على في البلكونه بتاعتي من الشجر القرود يفطروا معايا, يعني احنا كنا بنتقاسم الوجبه سوا, ودي كان حاجه عظيمه بالنسبه لي.
She's saying that it's true because one of the first experiences that she had in Kenya was in the mornings when she was having breakfast, the monkeys would come off of the trees and sit in the balcony with her and they would share breakfast together, and it was very yes, heartwarming.
They do. Or when you are not ready, they will pick the toast out of your hand. Nothing personal. They have to eat. Why should you eat alone? No, it's amazing. It's amazing when you talk about nature and how nature comes together. And I think it is very true. So how do you see that applying to even people? Because if you can think about nature, you can see animals and people can live together in harmony. What about the world we live in? When you see divisions in different places, living in a world, people talk about discrimination, people talk about racism. What should we learn from your art when you focus on an issue like that? Because, yeah, should it matter you are from America, someone is from England, or another one is from here or there? Should it matter? Because if we can, in Kenya, we can share the same country with animals and we are okay with it. And we don't speak the same language, but we speak one natural language. What should your art be telling the world? And I'm saying so because you've been everywhere. So,
بيسألك اللي هو لو أنت شايفة إنه البني آدم والحيوان مفروض يكونوا عايشين حياة واحدة مع بعض, إيه المبدأ اللي يتاخد من ده ويتحط في إنه مثلاً حد من الدولة دي والدولة دي يتعاملوا مع بعض, يعني racism and diversity وكذا.
مش
أدرى
في السؤال.
يعني المبدأ بتاع انه البني آدم والحيوانات مفروض يكونوا عايشين حياة واحدة مع بعض, المبدأ ده انت شايفاه يتحط مثلا في موقف لو حد جاي من بلد وبلد تانية, او بس رأيك عامة عن الراسيزم والديفيرسيتي؟
لا, هو دلوقتي يعني انا اتمنى ان الحياة كانت تفضل اقل تعقيدا من دلوقتي, لان احنا طول الوقت, وده بفعل الانسان هو اللي طول الوقت بيخلق تعقيدات وبيخلق موانع, شبه السفر وجوازات السفر, وشبه ان الحيوانات بيتم اصطيادها في بعض الاحيان, يعني في جرائم كبيره جدا بتتم من الانسان تجاه الطبيعه. بس انا بشكل فردي انا عندي حاسه ان عندي دور تجاه ده, لكن ما اقدرش اتخيل الحل الاكبر او الحاجات اللي بين الدول ممكن تبقى عامله ازاي. بس الفكره كلها انه يبقى في اتفاق عام, اذا كان فردي او على مستوى الدول, حمايه الطبيعه, لان احنا بقى عندنا جرائم, وده دلوقتي رد فعل الطبيعه علينا. احنا دلوقتي حاسينه, شبه التغير المناخي, الازمات اللي حصلنا دلوقتي والكوارث اللي احنا دلوقتي عايشينها, اعتقد انها كلها ده غضب من الطبيعه من اللي احنا عملناه فيها وتاريخنا معاها.
So she's saying the issue is that humans bring their own issues upon themselves, and we give ourselves our own restrictions. And an example of this is like border control, passports, and just limiting our interaction with one another. And it's things like that that channel us into doing really harmful things towards nature, like deforestation and just so many things that we should be preserving that we end up destroying. And she thinks as though nature is now kind of getting its retribution in things like global warming and just a lot of other current issues that could be avoided if we put as much care into each other and into the world as we do into progressiveness.
Indeed. And in terms of your work, of course you've done exhibition in London, and here you are in the UK. Where is your work being showcased right now, and could you also share other places you've done exhibitions before?
بيسألك انتي شغلك دلوقتي هنا في لندن معروض فين, وفي غير لندن معروض فين؟
اوكي, انا في لندن, انا تقريبا كل سنه ببقى موجوده من خلال الارت فيرز اللي هو 154, وساعات بعمل معارض في كرومويل. السنة دي هو موجود في جاليري
فيستروفيا
وموجود في 154. أما العادي لأن أنا من مصر فعندي الجاليري بتاعي في مصر، وبعد يعني معرضي الجاي هيبقى في السنغال، وبعديها معرضي اللي بعد معرضي في السنغال هيبقى في كينيا في شهر 6 اللي جاي 2024.
Okay, so currently her work is on display at the Fitzrovia Gallery in London. It's also on display at the art fairs that 154 holds and occasionally in Cromwell. This is something that's been happening for many years now, 154 in Cromwell. She obviously has her gallery in Maadi in Cairo.
In Egypt, in Zamalek.
In Zamalek? Mm. Okay, so her gallery is in Zamalek in Cairo. And she's working on having an exhibition in Senegal. And after Senegal, she's hoping to have an exhibition in Kenya in June 2024.
That's really cool. That's really good to know. And for people who come to, like, in terms of you spoke about climate change not long ago. We've seen a lot of things happening in terms of Mother Nature. Talk about Afghanistan, all these issues. We stick them to global warming. But have you considered, that's a question to you, following the theme of climate change, times like these, to be, you know, taken on board on the work that you do?
Wait, I'm confused. Could you repeat the question?
We've seen many incidences of global warming, mm-hmm. whether we are talking about what happened in Turkey some years back, the big earthquakes that went on for a long time. We've seen in Africa also the earthquake not long ago killing so many people, and a lot more examples of what yes. global warming is doing. So my question is, have you maybe in the future or soon considered to focus on the theme of climate change mm-hmm. on your work?
هو ده ما أعتقدش له علاقة يعني أنا يعني أنا عارفة السؤال بس مش عنديش إجابة واضحة. بس أنا أقول إنه في أزمات كبيرة، وأنا زي ما قلت الطبيعة غاضبة جدا، وده يعني إحنا فعلا لقينا ده في تركيا، لقينا ده في المغرب في الزلزال المغرب، في التورنيدو بتاع ليبيا. إحنا بقالنا فترة بنتعرض لده، وأنا شايفة إن ده رد فعل طبيعي من الطبيعة على اللي إحنا عملناه فيها. لكن ده مش موضوعي في الفن. أنا موضوعي في الفن يعني أنا بقدر الطبيعة في شغلي، وبشكل شخصي أنا بحترم الطبيعة، وبحاول بشكل فردي أكون شخص مهذب مع الطبيعة. لكن أنا شغلي أنا مهمومة فيه بنفسي، وأنا لو بتعرض لضغوط بسبب اللي بيحصل في الطبيعة فهيظهر by default في شغلي يعني.
Mm-hmm. So she's saying that she obviously acknowledges everything that's happened in Libya, Morocco and Turkey and all these places, but that's not necessarily her message and her work. So of course she does respect nature and that we do see in her work, but her work is like a reflection of herself. And so while she might objectively have all these opinions about nature, she's not been directly affected by any of it as of now. If she was to, then we would undoubtedly see it in her work, but as of yet she hasn't, and that's why we haven't seen any of these themes in her work as of yet.
Colorful radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
So right now, I'm going to speak to Sahara, a curator who have been part of the process of this great work. So introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us probably the kind of work you've done in curating and where.
Okay, my name is Sahara Behairi. I'm from Egypt. I'm a freelancer curator, art curator, and art economist. I have been working with Almas Foundation for this project in particular in the last, let's say, 7-8 months, maybe a year. And I know Saad for a couple of years now. So I guess I know her more maybe than others, and that's why I've been chosen to be part of this project.
Sure. And how would you say our work has been, like, locally in Egypt and then internationally, if you want to update us?
Well, first, I have been part of many projects internationally and inside Egypt. I curate shows in Egypt, South Africa, and I had a couple of experience in the Venice Biennale, 2015-2017. If we're talking about the Egyptian art scene, it is locally it is very good, doing very well in terms of, let's say, I will speak as an art economist, in terms of sales and a big base of collectors and things like that. But I feel there is a big lack of exposure in terms of internationally, especially with emerging artists. I mean, artists like Saad, she's already known internationally. She works a lot outside of Egypt, of course in Egypt, yes, but she's well known in Africa and internationally. She has been part of lots of art fairs in Europe, in the States, in Africa, of course. And she's doing well in this term. But if we look at the art scene in Egypt, I mean, we have lots of other talents that maybe did not have the tool or the right opportunity to be exposed or to be seen outside of Egypt. Not, of course, belittling the value of the local market, but I believe in a global or globalization in art, that we should exchange and be seen. As much as we know a lot about European or Western or even African, we would like also to be seen abroad.
And how much in terms of, great to know in terms of the economies of it all. And I will give you an example so you understand my question. Sometime you look into a very amazing painting. As an African, I will not say it's such a great painting. But then, as long as it's with by Picasso, it may be going up to £7 million. And if it was in Africa, maybe a few Egyptian pounds. what brings a difference? I mean, where does the value discrepancy, which is so huge, come?
That's a very sensitive question. I know that in terms of economy, unfortunately, people deal with art as a commodity, okay? So anything is sold as art piece is an artwork, regardless how do you receive it as a spectator. And I think the one who create the market or the value of any piece is, first of all, the exposure, and secondly, but most importantly, who see it or who show it. I mean, an artwork will remain normal until an important entity acquire it or show it or shed a light on it, and then it become, of course, more valuable than, I mean, it's a market game, in my opinion, unfortunately.
And I think also is it's got to do with what it means to different people.
Yes, well, what I explained is from economic point of view.
Yeah.
But art always remain a value on its own, a value on the meaning of the curator of the art.
Yeah.
I can't say that there is something better than the other, because each artist have something to offer. Each artwork, regardless if it's very obvious beauty in front of you or conceptual, it is the meaning, it is the message that the artist want to transmit to the spectator, or either to reveal it or to hide it sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with your answer. It's fantastic because I've watched a lot of artwork different times, and depending on who is looking at it,
yeah,
there's value or there's no value. And I don't know how far that goes also to culture, to societies. Because, for example, I'll give you a very clear example. If you were from Ghana and you know the history of Ghana, and you see a picture of what they used to call golden stool, which today they are still fighting to get it back from the UK. If you see that, it's got huge meaning. And yeah, if you are an artist, that immediately is sending powerful messages of to course. People from Ghana. But if you are from the UK, you're like, don't they have sofa? What is this? It yeah. doesn't have a lot of value or meaning to them. So another example would be, if you ever watch Mr. Bean movie, Mr. Bean ends up destroying a painting. But this painting belonged to a soldier's mom. So to him it was worth millions. But to Mr. Bean, after he destroyed it and he had to fix it back, he was given the chance to interpret it. And then he would just use his funny words. It's comedy, film comedy. He would just say, oh, to me it's just ugly looking painting, but to the son, to whom that is a mom, it means so much. Yeah. It's worth millions.
Yeah.
So do we all agree that the value of art, because it's a very good important question when we talk to make people understand, because just like me, they're like, how come when you sell that painting it's worth 7 million, yet another one, which according to interpretation of who is looking, it looks much pretty, much better looking and all that. How come? One is so expensive, the other one is not. So that's an interesting observation of people who are consumers of art.
Yeah. But as I said, yeah, I mean, yeah, there is two ways to look at it. As art, as art on its own, the value and the significance to its spectators from one person to the other, as you said now, or art as a commodity. I mean, in the art market, there is an annual report as if it's another commodity, as if it's a stock market, and it's really examining and analyzing the market, I mean, profit-wise, sales-wise, as if it's a normal commodity, regardless the meaning or the value of its spectator. So there is two way to look at it. That's why it's very sensitive. I cannot tell you that this art definitely worth this million or these millions, and another equal or even more beautiful, as you see it beautiful, worth maybe a couple of hundred. I mean, once again, it's a game of the market and how people look at it. But to cut the story short, a good art will survive and will find its way with the supporting system. And this supporting system should be private sector, governmental sector, institutions, foundations like Alma's Foundation, like you, what you are doing here. This what the artist need to let their art seen and their ideas heard worldwide.
I quite like your answer. Very much enlightening.
Thank you.
I would never wonder any other time that, oh, why is this expensive than the other now? I quite like your answer.
Well, it's also hard work. I mean, an artist like Picasso or like, I mean, these people worked long time. Their art lived until now. And they are, of course, deserve all the value they claim. So it is a progressive process. There is study, there is practice, and I mean, it's hard work. Like Suad, I mean, this is all what she's doing. She's painting, she's researching. It's hard work at the end of the day.
Very true. No, I quite like your answer. And also, thank you for your input because it's very valuable.
Thank you.
We are learning a lot today. So we'll go back to Suad. And listeners, you're listening to Colorful Radio, and this is Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto, and today we are in the studio with a great artist from Egypt. Her name, Suad Abdurrasul. So, yes, keep it colorful as we learn a lot, back to you. I know sometime in family setting, when you make a decision of what career to follow, sometime you get support from family. Sometimes they tell you, you've made the wrong choice. For example, I wanted to be a singer, but my family thought I didn't have the voice. So they're like, don't waste your time. Look for something else better to do. So the most amazing thing is art. When you join it and you're like, this is my dream. I mean, the moment you speak to your family, they're like, you have to do the produce the work before you look for market. Where can you get a day's job whereby you, as long as you sign the contract, you'll be paid at the end of the month? How supportive were they? How understanding were they?
بعد الثانوية العامة بيبقى كل الناس مركزين يدخلوا كليات يطلعوا منها يشتغلوا يلاقوا وظائف. وفنون جميلة عندنا في القاهرة انت بتطلع ما بتتعينش في حتة, يعني الدولة مش مسؤولة عنك بعد ما بتتخرج. فأنا كان كل اللي بيتقالي هتشتغلي ايه, كلمة هتشتغلي ايه دي لما قلت لهم ان انا داخلة فنون جميلة كانت حاجة كده زي النور كده بينور في وش كل شوية, هتشتغلي ايه؟ كل الناس بسألني هتشتغلي ايه. انا شخصيا كنتش عارفه اي حاجه عن اللي انا يعني عن قرار غير ان انا عايزه ارسم, ما اعرفش هشتغل ايه بس انا عايزه ارسم. فساعتها انا فاكره عائلتي كلهم كتبوا لي يعني اقتراحات انه كلها كليات بتضمن وظايف, وانا ركنت كل الاقتراحات دي على جنب وكتبت فنون جميله يعني كذا مره وقد كان يعني.
So she's saying in high school in Egypt, how it works is when you get a certain grade, you qualify for a certain like field to study in university. And she knew that she wanted to study the arts. But most people in their last year of high school are just worried to find jobs that, well, degrees that will get them jobs. And the arts don't really get you a job in Egypt. Like, it's very rare that somebody can break out. So when she went and told her family that, the main question that she would get is, what are you going to do for work? It was like a flashing light. Everybody would ask her, what are you going to work as? And she didn't know what she wanted to do like for work, but she knew that what she wanted to do was draw and paint. And everybody came and gave her suggestions as to jobs that, like, sorry, degrees that will give her a job. But she wasn't really too focused on any of that because she knew that that's not what she wanted to do. And so she did the arts, and here we are with a great job.
Not easy to overcome, isn't it? Because as you're saying, it's not easy to overcome. What's the secret of your patience? What kept you going? Because you didn't succumb to the pressure. Mom, dad, brother, sister, get a proper job.
Um,
يعني انا حاسه ان انا اصلا انا عمري ما شفت نفسي غير كده. يعني انا ما كانش عندي تخيلات عن نفسي اللي هو اختيارات اخرى فبختار ما بينهم. انا طول الوقت شايفه نفسي في الحته دي. حتى لما دخلت فنون جميله كنت كويسه مثلا في الخزف, اللي هو صناعه الخزف, بس انا كنت شايفه نفسي بينتر رسامه. فاخترت ده يعني بدون قرار. انا عارفه اللي هو حد بيوثق للقرار من جواه, يعني في حاجه داخليه هي اللي بتدفعني الاختيار دوت. ما عنديش اسباب واضحه ولا عناوين اقدر اقولها, فاهماني؟
She's saying that when she came to decide the arts or painting in general, there were a lot of things that she was good at and it made all those suggestions a lot more palpable, but it was just a gut feeling that even though there were other things she could do, this is what she had to do, that this is what she should do. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just something pushing her, and pushed hard, I guess.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
Colorful.
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 Genius.
Colorful. Colorful Radio.
That's great. That's great. So in terms of, I'm sure when you have a lot of young people looking up to you, and maybe one day they wish to, just like you, to see their work exhibited globally, how much or what would you advise them to do? To follow your footsteps or to be their own individual and follow individual ideas in this career?
أنا حاسة دلوقتي أن أنا يعني عندي دور تجاه الشباب الصغيرين الفنانين, أنه لو أقدر أدعم حد فيهم هعمل ده. بس الدعم مش أنه هم يتبعوا خطواتي أنا, لأنه لو هم مش ورايا أنا هيوصلوا لحتة مش دي الحتة اللي هم عايزينها. هو كل واحد لازم يتبع شغفه الشخصي وأحلامه وتصوراته عن الفن عشان يطلع حاجة تخصه هو.
She's saying that, of course, she feels that it is her responsibility to inspire young artists and support them in any way, shape or form, but it's not her journey that they have to follow, because if they followed her journey, they would end up in her position, and that's not what you want. That's not what art is. Everybody has their own passions, their own motivators, their own drives and their own dreams, and everybody should focus on what those are instead of trying to live out somebody else's reality instead of their own fantasy.
A very good answer. Artists, like writers, you craft work that is telling us a story. Take us in a very unique world where we see that. And of course, like writers, inspirations comes from many things. You may be walking on the streets of Nairobi, you saw lions and you spend the day being afraid and running. When you sleep at night, you begin to be afraid. But when you do your hard work tomorrow about a lion, I think you relive in a way that experience. So what things have been inspiring your journey, your work?
أنا بعتقد أن الفن مش بس وليد لحظة, هو الفن تراكمي. احنا بنكون خبراتنا البصرية والنفسية من خلال كل حاجة بتمر علينا, ومش بتمر علينا في اللحظة الحالية, هي تراكمات حتى من الطفولة. يعني احنا واحنا بنرسم او لما بنمتلك ادواتنا بنبقى بنفتح اوض جوانا كده, بنكتشف بيها نفسنا من جديد مع الاحداث اللي بنمر بيها. لكن هو في الاخر الفن تراكمي. حتى ما نقدرش نقول انه دلوقتي في مدرسة للفنون, لان الفنون تراكمية. يعني دلوقتي انا ما اقدرش اصنف واقول انا تبع اي مدرسة في تاريخ الفن, لان انا عندي روافد كتير وتراكم بصري وتاريخ كتير جوايا بيطلع. فينفعش تصنف دلوقتي حد وتقول ده بي 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 انسباير من الحتة دي, فهماني؟
So she's saying that art is not a momentary thing, it's the build-up of years of ideas and inspirations and theories and like classes. And you cannot define a whole school of art or a specific type of art. You can't succumb to one of those, or she can't, because that would be neglecting the fact that it's things from even her childhood. And she's saying that when painting or drawing or creating art in general, it's like opening up old rooms in a big building and rediscovering old parts of yourself. And that's really what channels everything she does, is that it's not just a moment and then you're an artist. It's the build up of years and years and years of being inspired by everything around you and just soaking everything in.
Great. Another question would be, arts, journalism, what we mirror the societies that we operate in, whether it's politics, culture, education, or whatever else, we tend to mirror what's happening in the society. Have you ever found yourself in a situation whereby your work was inspired, for example, by a political activity or what happened, or even a cultural event, whether in Egypt or globally?
والله
أنا بشوف إنه دور الفنان هو إنه يخلي الحياة أفضل ويكتشف مناطق جديدة في الفكر وفي الخيال اللي بدورها بتثري الواقع الثقافي. وأعتقد دي مساهمته. هل بقى هو متأثر بإيه؟ أنا زي ما قلت في الإجابة اللي قبل كده إنه إحنا بنتأثر بكل حاجة بتمر بينا، حتى يعني تغيير من فصل لفصل ده بيأثر فينا، فما بالك بقى في التغييرات السياسية والأثر، أكيد بتأثر. لكن زي ما قلت إن أنا معنية في المقام الأول بنفسي وبالناس اللي شبهي، وأي تأثير بيطرق عليا بيطلع في شغلي، إذا كان سياسي إذا كان تأثير حتى اجتماعي عادي، فده بيطلع في الشغل.
Right, so she's saying that in her work, as we discussed before with the climate change situation, it's purely about her and the people that she identifies with, the people that she looks like or the people that feel the same way she does. If there was something political that affected her or her people, then obviously it would come out in her work, but that's not the core of it. Obviously, as artists, their job is to kind of take reality and warp it and make it better, and just to break the bounds of normal thoughts or expectations or dreams, correct? And so when you let certain external factors that do not translate to you as an artist affect your work, it kind of becomes like muddled. And so that's why she's very much focused on the things that affect her. And if there was something that affected her politically or even just generally socially, she's saying that as a person, like objectively, political things of course affect her, they affect all of us. And as an artist, she thinks she feels to a higher degree than most other people would, but it's a thing that unless it directly affects her, it won't translate into her work.
That's great. Then perhaps the last question would be, now you are doing a lot of work here, do you think there's something you haven't done that you can begin to contribute towards the betterment of future artists from Egypt or even globally, the ones who are coming up? Or do you feel you've done enough?
يعني بيسألك انت عندك اي خطوات جاية جديدة ان انت عايزة تحسني، عايزة تستعمليها ان انت تحسني موقف الارتست الجداد يا في مصر يا في باقي العالم.
اتكلم عن فاونديشن. اوكي. انا حاسة طول الوقت ان انا عندي دور تجاه مجتمعي اولا، الدائرة الصغيرة واسرتي وبتوسعاتها يعني. فأنا من ضمن يعني أحلامي أو قراراتي اللي أنا بسعى لها طول الفترة الأخيرة تحديدا إن أنا يبقى عندي مكان لتفرغ الفنانين أو Art Foundation، بحيث إنه الشباب الصغيرين يلاقوا طريقة لو محتاجين مساحة، لو محتاجين خامات، لو فده دوري في الفترة دي إن أنا أعمل مؤسسة بإمكانياتي أنا أساعد بيها إن لأن أنا وأنا في سنهم كنت محتاجة حد يدعمني بالشكل ده.
So she's saying that as a person she feels a very strong sense of loyalty to her family and her family friends and her community in general. And so one thing that she does want to do is to be able to branch out and start like a foundation or like a safe haven for young people in that community to come and have a space to be creative and to think and to find all the materials that they might need. And that's purely because when she was their age, she wishes that there was somebody who could do that for her. And I think it's very important to her to be able to give back to the community that created her.
Oh, that's fantastic. So lastly, your advice to me, if I want to be an artist, what should I do? Well, it's too late.
Yeah, never too late, by the way.
Never too late.
اعتقد انه هو الموضوع لازم يبدا بموهبه في الاول، لكن اي حد عنده موهبه في اي سن هو يقدر يبدا. بس هو محتاج مجهود، الفن محتاج مجهود جدا. الناس ما تتخيلش ان هو حاجة خفيفة أو لا، هو محتاج مجهود زي ما بتبني أي كارير، محتاج تبني ده. أنا شخصيا بروح مرسمي كل يوم كل يوم في معايد معين، الصبح بدري الساعة 6 الصبح وبمشي منه الساعة 5، ورغم التزاماتي الأخرى تجاه أسرتي. بس ده هو دي الحاجة الوحيدة اللي هتوصلك، انك تكون بتبذل مجهود واخلاص بالاضافة للموهبة. لو عايز تبدأ في اي سن محتاج تعمل دوت.
So she's saying of course in the beginning you need to have passion and skill, but those aren't the only two things that can help you become an artist. People don't expect that you need to put in as much effort as you do, but she works day in and day out. And she was just saying that in Egypt back home she goes to her own studio from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily just to practice, because art is something that is constantly changing and we know that. But unless you can find a way to adapt to the changes and make them your own and just work enough so that you're there to have a structured like foundation in case of anything, like it's beyond just skills or passion. You can love something and be great at it and still not make it because you didn't put the work in. And so you need the effort more than most people realize. So yeah, that would be like her main piece of advice is work for it. Don't just wish for it.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very good advice. and to our listeners.
Africa in Focus.
Yeah. Ricky, baby, one more dance with my lover, one last chance with my lover. What do you say, Omo Tena? I just want one dance with my lover. Say, will you dance with me, my baby? Oh, ride with me, my baby. Oh, just one light with me, my baby. Oh, one, my baby. Oh, yeah.
So, would you love like a lover, treat you like a lover? What you want, baby? I do. When you are around, I lose my cool. Sweet love, sweet love. My heart, sweet love, sweet love. You want it, call me my pharaoh.